Welcome to the Project Safe Neighborhoods podcast series presented by the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice. As you know, Project Safe Neighborhoods is a nationwide commitment to reduce gun and gang crime in America by networking existing local programs that target gang and gun crime and providing these programs with additional tools necessary to be successful. Since its inception in 2001, approximately $2 billion has been committed to this initiative. This funding is being used to hire new federal and state prosecutors, support investigators, provide training, distribute gun lock safety kits, deter juvenile gun crime, and develop and promote community outreach efforts, as well as to support other gun and gang violence reduction strategies. NCPC is proud to be a partner with BJA on this very important work. This podcast series from NCPC invites experts from the field to share the latest emerging trends, information, and success stories, and strategies in gang and gun violence prevention. We hope you find this series beneficial to your work and the resources presented helpful. I am your host, Sarita Hill Coltrane, Senior Training Manager with the National Crime Prevention Council. This podcast series is recognizing gangs in our communities. According to the latest gang statistics, there are close to 30,000 gangs and approximately 782,500 gang members in the United States. Gang violence and activity can overpower neighborhoods and implant fear within the community, infringing on citizens' rights to live in a safe and healthy environment. This podcast interview will discuss how to recognize if there is gang activity in your neighborhood, why children are attracted to gangs, how to prevent the gang culture from reaching our children, and the steps law enforcement are taking to address this nationwide challenge. This podcast interview will feature Lieutenant James Perez with the Fairfield, Connecticut Police Department. Lieutenant James Perez is with the Fairfield, Connecticut Police Department in the Special Services Division and has 20 years of experience in law enforcement. He has held many positions within the agency, including task force member with the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Drug Enforcement Administration. He has taught the DARE program in elementary school and was a member of the SWAT team for 14 years. Lieutenant Perez has appeared in several publications and held the position of public affairs officer. He teaches identity theft and scam awareness topics to community groups and has appeared nationally on NBC's Dateline TV program regarding scams against senior citizens. Currently, he is the commander of the Special Services Division, which includes liaison officer with the Honorable Police Commission in Fairfield, and oversees police operations including the Marine Division, Dive Team, Special Agent Program, Crash Investigators, Traffic Officers, Animal Control, Fleet Management, Crossing Guards in the South Benson Marina. He also has experience in terrorism risk assessment and has extensive experience in crime prevention through environmental design, or SETED. Lieutenant Perez attended the University of New Haven, the Connecticut Police Academy, and the FBI Law Enforcement Executive Development Association. During his career, he has earned citations from FBI Director Louis Free and Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal. He has been recognized for successful criminal investigations against violent gangs. He also received the Combat Cross Award for involvement in a police shooting. Lieutenant Perez has instructed international law enforcement in Nicaragua, Northern Ireland, and Australia. Lieutenant Perez, thank you very much for assisting NCPC with this podcast interview.
You're very welcome.
How do we know if there are gangs in our neighborhoods?
Well, you know, like you said before, gangs continue to commit criminal activity. They're recruiting new members. They're not just in urban areas. They're not showing up in suburban and rural areas. Their membership has increased greatly in the Northeast and the Southeast region, so that's basically the entire Eastern Seaboard. Although we do know that out west in the Great Lakes, they have the largest numbers of gangs. But, you know, one of the ways that you can really tell if you have gangs in your neighborhood, and it's pretty universal, is, for instance, the use of graffiti. Graffiti, you know, if it doesn't use multiple colors and it just uses black lettering and has sharp angles to it, and if you see letters and numbers, you can be sure that it's possibly gang-related. And if you see little criminal mischief acts that are taking place in the neighborhood, you see a loose-knit group of kids that are constantly waving hand signs and wearing a particular clothing, then you can be sure that more likely than not, you probably have gangs in your neighborhood.
Can you tell us what gangs look like?
Well, you know, it depends on where you are. Years ago, it used to be that gangs would proudly display all of their regalia, which is basically, they would use bandanas, whether it's a blue bandana for signifying a certain gang member like the Crips, or the Bloods will use a red one. Then you have the Latin Kings that will use gold and black. Sometimes you'll see them dressed with one pant leg rolled up, the other one down. You'll notice that they hang around in groups, large groups of three or more. They like hanging around in parks and taking over areas. They'll start by their newspaper. Their newspaper is really graffiti. That's the way that they really kind of codify what their intentions are. And like any cryptography, which is really what it is, it's being able to decipher those signs. But they sometimes will have certain sports team jerseys on. For instance, the Latin Kings are known to have the Pittsburgh Pirate because they have yellow in it. The Cardinals for the Bloods. So there's a lot of different ways to identify them, but really a gang now in today's day with hybrid gangs, they can look like anyone. And the scary part is that because of law enforcement having such an impact on these gangs, they now hide those colors from us. So to answer your question, really, what do gangs look like? They can look like you and I.
Why are children attracted to gangs?
You know, this is where it gets kind of interesting, because now we start getting into the sociological area of life here. I have what's called the three circles of influence, or the three spheres of influence, and it's family, schools, and neighborhoods. It starts with the families. If the kids don't have a good foundational family life and support structure, those that lack self-confidence, those that don't think that they do so well in school, they're going to turn to these individuals, gangs, because the gang members will promise them that they'll be protected. If a kid is bullied, oftentimes they'll turn to the gangs instead of telling the parents, so that the parents can address the problem. And sometimes kids come from a broken family or a one-parent family, and sometimes if there's drug abuse or substance abuse in that family, those kids will look for a replacement family. And that's where the gangs, that's the power of the gangs. They come in at a very early age, and they embrace the individual, and they'll tell them that, you know, with us, you'll be big, and we won't let anybody mess with you, and if anybody messes with you, you come tell us. The problem is that once you start going down that road, they'll always want something in return. So there are many, socially, there are many reasons why kids turn to gangs, or why they're attracted to gangs. And a lot of times it's a positive role model. They end up having parties, and if you want to be the popular kid in the block, then you go with a gang member because nobody messes with them. So there really is parents, that three sphere of influence, family, schools, and neighborhoods, have a huge impact on being able to make a difference from preventing children from being attracted to gangs to begin with. Let's take schools, for instance. Schools have a responsibility. They can report gang activity, or they can report someone who's been threatened to join a gang. In the neighborhoods, you know, neighborhood watch programs can be extremely effective in being able to prevent kids from joining gangs, just simply by having a relationship with law enforcement.
Now, how can we prevent the gang culture from reaching our children?
That's a tough question. I mean, one of the things that we have to make sure is, again, looking at that three circles of influence We have to make sure that families are solidly put together. So what I mean by that is that the families are actually looking out for the welfare of the children from a very young age. And sometimes the families don't have that support structure, and that's where we can band together as a community. And I mean between law enforcement and other government agencies, we can kind of help to be on the lookout for those families that are falling in between. But more important things, you can get, you know, children involved with sports is a good example of keeping them away from gangs. Doing activities at school, providing gang and drug awareness programs. These are the things that are going to help building up their self-confidence and their self-esteem, and being able to let them know that they don't have to withstand the pressure of being with a gang is really how we prevent the gang culture. And it really has to be a community effort. It can't just be one neighborhood working alone, but it has to be law enforcement working with the criminal justice system and then working with private entities to actually bring smart programs to, first of all, strengthen the foundation of the families, because that's what's going to be the springboard to actually getting the kids to have enough confidence to want to stay away from gangs.
What are some of the things that law enforcement is doing about gangs?
I will tell you that right now there are many, many law enforcement agencies that are taking part in actually suppressing gang activities. But I will tell you this. A local agency can't do it by themselves, and even a state agency can't do it by themselves. I was involved with an FBI gang task force in the 90s, and just to give you an example, we came together, federal, state, and local, banding together, working against a very prominent gang that were predominantly Latin Kings. And one of the things that we did was we were able to reduce violence by 40% in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 40%. The following year after we took these individuals off the streets. But they were involved in narco trafficking. They were involved in murders and murder plots. Really, it's amazing the difference that agencies can do. But in 2005, Congress came up with the National Gang Intelligence Center, which is really a repository of intel that comes in from every local, state, and federal agency. And that's used to actually to arm officers, local, state, and federal, with information on gang violence and how to prevent gang violence. But I will tell you that it's besides that point, the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, as well as the Drug Administration, Drug Enforcement Administration, and even ICE has all gotten together now on the bandwagon and they've always been part of a task force of investigating gangs. But I got to tell you, gangs are becoming a bigger problem. We're now to the point where they're working with cartels and actually peddling drugs, peddling weapons. And the sad thing is that gang members are being recruited at early age, like as early as 8 years old, because a lot of the gang members know that if the younger person gets in trouble, they're not really going to get as much legal trouble as if they were of age. So the trend is falling that gangs are increasing, and I think that law enforcement is doing a lot to stay on top of it. You'll read a lot of arrests that are made on a federal, state, and local level with cooperation of partners on a federal, state, and local level. And that's the way that that we're actually approaching it. But, you know, it takes a lot, because in preventing law enforcement getting involved with gangs, we have to do three strategies. One is prevention, one is intervention, and then one is enforcement. And I'll give you a quick example of that. In Connecticut, Bridgeport, Connecticut has today what's called Project Longevity, where they're actually reaching out to active known gang members. And this is, you know, this is pretty good. They're actually reaching out to them when they identify them, and they bring them into the police department and basically tell them that they're aware of them and they're watching them and that they're warning them not to get in trouble. Well, crime in Bridgeport has dropped tremendously in the last few years, and that's a result of collaboration between the police department, the courts, the juvenile system, because the courts want to reduce recidivism rate. The juvenile arrests of 16- and 17-year-olds are being remanded back to a youth status rather than as an adult, because we find that when you put them in an adult court and you prosecute them that way, chances are they'll be involved in more serious crime. We've removed guns at the point of incidents. When an incident takes place, the police have removed guns. And, of course, we've issued temporary restraining orders where they lose a gun automatically. So these factors all factor in and into reducing crime in the state of Connecticut in general. And they had a big article just yesterday, as a matter of fact, in the Connecticut Post, where the statewide numbers show that injuries have dropped for the second straight year and murders have dropped sharply. So Connecticut is well on its way to giving a good foundation of how to work in conjunction with federal partners, state partners, local partners, and being able to lower the risk of gangs.
And lastly, how are gangs tracked and who actually does this?
Gangs are tracked a number of different ways. You'll always have a local officer in some agency that becomes the gang expert or is aware of all the gangs, nicknames, lingo, that kind of stuff. On a state level, you'll have fusion centers. Every single state in the nation has a fusion center now. And they don't just work with tracking terrorists, but they also work with tracking and looking after gangs. But the real big entity that I think most people aren't even aware of that actually track gangs and gives us a lot of incredible intel are the prisons. State, county, and federal prisons are wrought with excellent intel because a lot of these gangsters end up going to prison and spending a lengthy amount of time there. They have staff that's dedicated to just tracking gang prisoners, that is, past, future, and present ones, obviously, but because of association and phone calls, you know, unfortunately, we have a segment of the population in the United States where they have repeat gangsters. In other words, they're generational. So because the grandfather was a gangster, the father becomes a gangster, and because the father's a gangster, the grandson becomes a gangster. With that, you can kind of follow a trend and predict who's likely going to be into a gang and who's not. But the correctional system has a phenomenal repository, and also so does the National Gang Intelligence Center. They also have a repository of gang information and actually track them. So I think we're in a good place on keeping an eye on gangs. But I will tell you that it is a growing problem. It does need to be addressed more. We know that graffiti is the start of taking over territorial dominance. Graffiti, we know, is a newspaper or their way of coding or giving information. And I think it's important that if we look after our children, raise their self-esteem, their confidence, keep them busy in schoolwork and in activities with sports and everything, that we are well on our way to preventing gang influence and violence. By intervening and by also having law enforcers do a great job in tracking them down and staying on top of it.
Well, Lieutenant Perez, I'd like to thank you very much for assisting NCPC with this podcast, the information, the resources, and the strategies that you presented. You know, I hope that our listeners here will take that and be able to implement some of those in their communities.
Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. You're very welcome.
This podcast can be downloaded on NCPC's website, PSN, and the Gang Violence Prevention landing pages at www.ncpc.org. This podcast is presented by the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance and supported by grant number 2010-GP-BX-K006. The Bureau of Justice Assistance is a component of the Office of Justice Program, which includes the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the National Institute of Justice, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, Smart Office, and the Office for Victims of Crime. Points of view or opinions in this podcast are those of the author and do not represent the official position or policies of the United States Department of Justice. Again, this is Sarita Hill Coltrane with NCPC with Lieutenant James Perez. We thank you for listening to this podcast interview.